Today, the broadcast ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with the family of Rehoboam as we pick up in 2 Chronicles, chapter 11, verse 1. And now, with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
And when Rehoboam was come to Jerusalem, he gathered from the house of Judah and Benjamin 180,000 chosen men who were warriors to fight against Israel that he might bring the kingdom again to Rehoboam. So he armed the men, gathered his army together. He was going to invade the north, the civil war. But the word of the Lord came to Shemaiah, the man of God, saying, "Speak unto Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, king of Judah, and to all of Israel and Judah and Benjamin, saying, Thus saith the Lord, you shall not go up nor fight against your brethren. Return every man to his house, for this thing is done of me. And they obeyed the words of the Lord and the return from going against Jeroboam." And so civil war was averted at that point because of this prophet who came and gave to them the word of the Lord. Now Rehoboam set about the task of fortifying the southern kingdom. And basically these cities that he fortified are the cities towards the south, from where Edom and Moab might attack and from where the Egyptians might attack. And so it lists the cities. They already existed, but he just built the walls and defenses for these cities. And you can get a Bible map and you can follow the cities. It starts out with Bethlehem, just 6 miles from Jerusalem, goes to Etam, which is another 3 miles, down to Tekoa, which is just south from the Herodian, it's 6 miles from Bethlehem. And these cities sort of towards the south that were fortified. Lastly, Hebron, which is in Judah, and then in Benjamin also fenced cities which would protect them from the north. He fortified the strongholds. He put captains in them and stores of victuals, of oil and wine. And every several city he put shields and spears and made them exceeding strong, having Judah and Benjamin on his side, and the priests and the Levites that were in all of Israel resorted to him from all of their coasts. Now, the division of the nation brought also those from the north who wanted to remain true to David. They moved on into Judah and became a part of the kingdom, and especially the Levites. Jeroboam, rather than following the word of the prophet Ahijah, when he became the king of the northern tribes, he led them immediately into idolatry, realizing that the people were going back to Jerusalem, observing the feast, seeing the glory of the temple, the glory of the city of Jerusalem and all. They were being drawn in an allegiance back towards the Davidic kingdom. And so Jeroboam, to protect his own interest, figured that the only way to keep them from being drawn back to Jerusalem is to create worship centers in the north. And thus he established in Bethel, which would be on the southern end of the northern kingdom, and in Dan, which would be up at the northern end, just before you get to Mount Hermon. He established in these cities the calf worship. He put golden calves and said, these are the gods that brought you out of Egypt, and he instituted idolatrous calf worship among the people. And he fired all of the Levites. He would not allow the Levites to minister to the people. And so the verse here indicates there was a general exodus of the Levites from the cities of refuge that were in the northern kingdom, and they came on down into Judah because of the temple and because of the worship there. So they Levites pretty well deserted that northern area. When Jeroboam had fled to Egypt, he found favor in the eyes of Shishak, the king of Egypt, who he lived there comfortably until he was called back by the people at the death of Solomon. I think that probably has something to do with what we will read in the next chapter. Verse 14, the Levites left their suburbs, the houses where they were living, and the area, the territories that had been given to them in the north, and they left their possessions, and they came to Judah and Jerusalem, for Jeroboam and his sons had cast them off from executing the priest office unto the Lord. And he, Jeroboam, ordained him priest for the high places and for the devils and for the calves which he had made. And so instantly the people of the north were led by the king into idolatrous worship. Now, it must, of course, be noted that they could not just be led there unless they wanted to go. In other words, if they had a real commitment unto the Lord, the king could not have led them away. So it indicates really the fact that there was a general apostasy among the people in the northern tribe, that they would so quickly and so easily forsake the Lord and to follow after these idolatrous gods that Jeroboam had set up. There is always that enigma of why people would leave the true and the living God to worship other gods. An enigma, unless you understand human nature and what the worship of the other gods entailed. Basically, the teaching of the Bible and the teaching of Jesus Christ opposes the fleshly nature of man. The Bible teaches that the real life is the life of the Spirit. And the life of the Spirit is superior to the life of the flesh. The Bible teaches that to really find life, real spiritual life, you've got to deny yourself and take up your cross and follow Jesus. Now, the other religious systems appeal to man's flesh. They are centered around man's flesh. They are centered around man's fleshly desires. And they encourage man to indulge himself in his sexual passions and in just his plain desires of the flesh, whatever they may be. And when you look at the contrast, you can realize why the pagan religions would be so popular. They basically tell you, do your thing. Eat, drink, and be merry. And indulge yourself in every fleshly kind of excitement that you may desire. So the gods of pleasure, the goddesses of fertility, and all of these, they appeal to the flesh of man. Jesus definitely pointed out that if you seek to live after the flesh, you're going to die. You've got to be born again. You've got to come into a spiritual life and the life of the Spirit. If you seek to save your life, you'll lose it. If you'll lose your life for His sake, you'll find it. And He pointed out again and again the superiority of the life of the Spirit over the life of the flesh. The big difference being the life of the flesh and the pleasures of the flesh are so short-lived. The life of the Spirit is eternal. And so to live after the Spirit, to deny the flesh, deny self, and the superiority of the walk in the Spirit over the walk in the flesh. Because it did make these kind of demands, because it was opposed to the fleshly nature of man, the fallen fleshly nature of man, people were willing to gravitate towards a religion that would be appealing to their flesh. I see a problem today, even within the church, of the church attempting to create a religion that is appealing to man's flesh, that would be entertaining for man, one that is enjoyable, one where you can go and just enjoy the marvelous production, appealing to the flesh. And it's strange that so oftentimes when a church is trying to build its attendance, it seeks to develop programs that would be appealing to the flesh. But we must remember that to walk after the Lord is to walk after the Spirit. God is a spirit. They that worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. And God has laid down the restrictions concerning a fleshly life. I'm not to live after the flesh. I'm not to covet my neighbor's wife, house, the fleshly things that he has. I'm not to commit adultery. I am to walk in holiness before the Lord. I'm to walk in purity. And man's flesh rebels against the restrictions that God has placed. And yet, these rules that God has given to us are rules that will bring you into a satisfying, happy life. God is saying that monogamy is the best way to go. That every man should have his wife, one wife, and that they should create the home where they can raise their children in a loving environment, and this is what life is all about. But the world of the flesh would have you to believe that life is promiscuity. It's weekend stands. And thus, in the United States today, we had what was called the sexual revolution. And all of these disco clubs and all, where you would go to find your weekend partner. Interesting how God put a sudden halt to the whole revolution. There was sort of a sad, tragic emptiness to it all. I do not believe. It is so fulfilling. It is so wonderful to have that family tie, to be with the children, to be with the grandchildren, even after the children are grown. I only wish that we had a compound, a Smith compound someplace, where all of the kids would live together on the compound, so that the grandkids, when they had a rough time at home, could just come over to Grandpa. God probably has not arranged that because he knows I'd spoil them absolutely rotten, but I would enjoy it. But oh, what fulfillment, what joy, what blessings as you obey the rules that God has set, as you walk in the Spirit. What a joy it is to hear my little grandkids reciting scriptures. My little grandson, Charlo, he's a chip off of the old block. He took scissors the other day and tried to cut his hair so he could look like Grandpa. To hear them pray, to answer their questions about God, to see the heritage going down to our children's children. It's beautiful, fulfilling, it's rich. I wouldn't trade it for anything. For all of the pleasures that the world may offer in the indulging of the flesh, none of them can compare with the joy and the pleasure of seeing the family walking with Jesus. So, the people turned after the gods that Jeroboam had set up because they were gods by which they could indulge their fleshly appetites. Interesting, he says that they had set up an ordained priest for the high places and devil worship. So quickly they reverted back to the flesh, the calves, which he had made. And after them, out of all of the tribes of Israel, those that had set their hearts to seek Jehovah, God of Israel, came to Jerusalem. So there was a general desertion out of the northern kingdom by the people who really wanted to serve the Lord. They couldn't handle what was going on. And they came to Jerusalem to sacrifice unto Jehovah, God of their fathers. And so they strengthened the kingdom of Judah and made Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, strong for 3 years. And for 3 years they walked in the way of David and Solomon. And the inference was, during that time they became strong, powerful. Now, Rehoboam begins to follow the pattern of his father Solomon, not to the same extent, but yet as the law concerning the kings in Deuteronomy, as we were studying Solomon. In the 70th chapter of Deuteronomy, it says the king is not to multiply wives unto himself. Rehoboam started following the example of Solomon. He took Mahalath, the daughter of Jeremoth, the son of David, to wife. Abihail, the daughter of Eliab, the son of Jesse, which bare him children, Jeus, Shemariah, Zaham. And after her, he took Maacah. Now, you have to say that he loved her most, who was the granddaughter of Absalom. And she bare him Abijah, who became the king in his stead, and the three other sons. Rehoboam loved Maacah, the daughter of Absalom, above all of his wives and concubines, for he took 18 wives and 60 concubines, and had 28 sons and 60 daughters. I think that's just too much. How could you keep track of them all? And Rehoboam made Abijah, the son of Maacah, the chief, to be the ruler among his brethren, for he planned to make him king, which he ultimately did. And he dealt wisely and dispersed all of his children throughout all the countries of Judah and Benjamin, unto every fenced city. He gave them victuals in abundance, and he desired many wives. So Rehoboam began himself to walk after the ways of the flesh. So it came to pass when Rehoboam had established the kingdom and had strengthened himself, he forsook the law of the Lord, and all of Israel with him. So not only was there apostasy In the northern kingdom, now there develops the apostasy in the southern kingdom, and tragic, tragic, turning away from God. The nation now is forsaking the Lord. And it came to pass that in the fifth year of the reign of King Rehoboam, that Shishak, the king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem because they had transgressed against the Lord. So the chronicler is careful to point out that the real reason for this invasion, for the problems that began to arise, was the fact that they had turned against the Lord.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of 2 Chronicles in our next lesson, as we follow the attack against Israel. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD, and phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Chronicles. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
God is looking for people through which He can work. God wants to do a work today in our community, in our nation. God uses individuals to do His work as instruments. God is looking for instruments to use. The eyes of the Lord are going to and fro throughout the entire earth, that He might show Himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are perfect towards Him. Oh God, help us this week that our hearts might be brought into a complete commitment of ourselves unto the work of the Lord, to do that which He desires, that we might be His instruments, bringing His love, His word, and His hope to this world in which we live. May God anoint you and make you His instrument. In Jesus' name.
The Word for Today presents this year's Prophetic Viewpoint on DVD and MP3 with Pastor Brian Broderson.
So I want to just encourage you tonight, and I want to remind you of a few things that, despite all of the negative things that are going on in the world, there's some really good things happening. And the Lord is working powerfully all over the world.
In a collection of messages from Don Stewart and Pastor Chuck Smith discussing world news events in light of what the Scriptures declare.
We need to really pray. I don't think that we're beyond God's help. And I think that, as God said, if my people called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then would I hear from heaven, and I will heal their nation.
To order your copy of this year's Prophecy Update with Pastor Chuck Smith, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org or call us at 800-272-WORD.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.